Encounter Church, welcome. I took liberty to wear a t-shirt today. I typically don't, but I wore a t-shirt because yesterday Ann Swetnam, who's leading our children's ministry, had a wonderful training session for us. Chip Swetnam even cooked omelets, right? Like he had an omelet bar yesterday morning for all the teachers and those who were there. And then at the end, they handed out these really cool t-shirts. And I just thought, I need to wear this t-shirt. And I want to tell you that if you want to go to training sessions where there's omelets being served, or if you want to look cool and have a t-shirt like this, all you need to do is to sign up and help in our children's ministry, right? Ann Swetnam, along with her sidekick Chip Swetnam, are doing a wonderful job of leading our children's ministry. And so I just want to encourage you, get involved with what God is doing in our children's ministry. We've got babies that are starting to fill up the nursery, right, again, right? We got some that are in process. Lord willing, we'll be here. And now everyone's wondering, who is it? Well, you'll just have to figure that out. Wait a few months and you'll figure it out. But there's just some exciting things going on. It's not Marin, just so you know, all right? Just say, can I tell them, Derek? Sure, why not, right? It's Derek and Tori, our great with child over there, right? Yeah, so they're helping fill up that nursery, and so that's exciting, all right? Lots of cool things going on here at the church. All right, so turn in your Bibles to the book of Ruth. Many of you are probably there. You've probably had it bookmarked over the last number of months as we've been walking through the book of Ruth. And we are, this morning, we are concluding our study in the book of Ruth. We'll be in Ruth chapter 4. If you're not exactly sure where that book is at, if you use one of the Bibles that's there at the seats, all right, one of the chair Bibles, you'll find it on page 378. So page 378. If it's a chair Bible, hopefully you brought your own Bible from home, and you'll find it there in the Old Testament. But Ruth chapter 4 is what I'll be preaching from this morning. And just to give you a little bit of a heads up, next Sunday we're going to be starting a teaching series that's going to take us there into the summer months. And it's not a book study, but instead it's a study that's really the title of the series is Shaping Our Hearts. And we'll be considering formative practices in our lives that help shape us into the image of Jesus Christ. Because it's so important because everything that we do, everything we listen to, everything we watch, it's shaping our heart in some way, right? It's either shaping our heart more into the image of Christ, or it's shaping our heart more into the image of the world in which we live. And so next Sunday, we will be starting into this teaching series that's really going to call into question and say, hey, what are we allowing to shape our hearts? And then what are we stepping away from that maybe is playing a bad shape in our heart? And then what are we intentionally stepping into that will help shape our hearts? And so that will take us through a portion of most of the summer, and then in the month of August, we'll be studying the book of Ecclesiastes. So those of you who like to read ahead, go ahead, start studying that, start reading it. Shoot me ideas, observations that maybe you have, ways that book is speaking to your heart, and that will then take us into the fall right up to Advent. And just like that, it's Christmas time, right? So here we are back in the month of April, to the book of Ruth. All right, follow along with me as I read, and I'd like to begin reading here in verse 11. All right, then the elders and all the people at the gate said, "We are witnesses. May the Lord make the woman who is coming into your home like Rachel and Leah, who together build up the family of Israel. May you have standing in Ephrathah and be famous in Bethlehem. Though the offspring the Lord gives you by this young through the offspring the Lord gives you by this young woman, may your family be like that of Perez, whom Tamar bore to Judah." Verse 13. So Boaz took Ruth, and she became his wife. When he made love to her, the Lord enabled her to conceive, and she gave birth to a son. The woman said to Naomi, "Praise be to the Lord, who this day has not left you without a guardian redeemer or a kinsman redeemer. May he become famous throughout Israel. He will renew your life and sustain you in your old age. For your daughter-in-law, who loves you and who is better to you than seven sons, has given him birth. Then Naomi took the child in her arms and cared for him. The women living there said, "Naomi has a son," and they named him Obed. He was the father of Jesse, the father of David. This, then, is the family line of Perez. Perez was the father of Hezron, Hezron the father of Ram, Ram the father of Amminadab, Amminadab the father of Nahshon, Nahshon the father of Salmon, Salmon the father of Boaz, Boaz the father of Obed, Obed the father of Jesse, and Jesse the father of David. I just want to say I believe that each of us who are sitting here this morning, that God has us here for a reason, and that you are here, and that God has, in his kindness, brought each of us together this morning as we gather around his word. And I believe that God has something for each of us as we listen to his word and as his word is taught. And so I'm thankful and glad to have you here, each of you, and trust that God will indeed speak. Several weeks ago, as I've mentioned a couple weeks ago, but several weeks ago, my family went to hear the Cincinnati Orchestra. And prior to the start of the evening of the official concert, the individual members of the orchestra, they were mingling out onto the stage, and they began tuning their instruments. If you've ever been to an orchestra, you're familiar with that event, that portion of the evening. One of the children, one of my kids, it was Merritt, actually, who was sitting there close by, he leaned over as we were listening to this hodgepodge of instruments being tuned. Merritt, unaware of what exactly was going on, he leans over and he says, what are they doing? And then he follows it up with a very honest question. He says, "Is this part of the concert?" It's like, is this what we paid money for? And so I went ahead and I explained to Merritt how each member of the orchestra was tuning their instrument. And eventually the conductor will step out, he'll walk out on stage, he'll raise his hands of the orchestra, and as many of us, right, we're familiar with this scene, he'll take his little baton, he'll tap it there on the podium, he'll raise it, and then he'll conduct all of these, what seem to be foreign sounds, he'll bring them all together as one beautiful sound. And I explained that to Merritt, and that's exactly what happened, right? The conductor eventually walked across the front of the stage, he stepped up, and a hush fell over the orchestra. All the eyes were on the conductor. And the conductor raised his hands, and in that moment, a beautiful sound filled the entire hall. That which only a few moments prior seemed to be nothing more than a catastrophe of sound, right? A train wreck of sound. There was a beautiful sound that was now echoing throughout the chamber. And really, an awe-inspiring concert then began to each person in their ears who was there listening. This morning, we're reaching the finish line of our study through the book of Ruth. Chapter 4 concludes with a glimpse of how the conductor, the Lord, brings order to disorder. How beauty in these final verses, how beauty is going to rise from catastrophe. How God's purposes run through imperfect people and imperfect situations. This morning, the big idea for today's sermon is this: and yet God is still redeeming. And yet God is still redeeming. I almost wish as we were singing that song, or as you read that passage from Job, I almost thought, man, that would have been a great big idea. I know that my Redeemer lives, right? So you can, this is kind of the bonus, all right, edition, right? The bonus content here, maybe even in your notes or in your Bible, we're going to see, right, that one of the beauties of this passage, of these verses, is that affirmation, that confirmation that yes, God is working, because we know that our Redeemer lives. And we're going to see that, and Lord willing, we will end up there at the end of the finish line. But we'll see that really the big idea that I'm working off of is that, and yet God is still redeeming. Again, as we've studied this passage, right, we have seen these smatterings, these incidents, these times where in the lives of these women, maybe it just didn't completely make sense. If you remember back to the beginning of our study there in Ruth chapter 1, how does Ruth begin? The book begin? It says, in the days when the judges ruled, right? In a time period in which everyone was doing what seemed right in their own eyes. So the world was a mess. People were just doing what felt good to them. It says that there was a famine in the land, right? There was hardship, there was heartache that these people were experiencing. And so what did Elimelech and Ruth and her sons, they said, we're out of here, right? We're going to take matters into our own hands, and instead of trusting God in the midst of this, we're going to go to Moab. And so they go to Moab, and the wheels just continue to come off. The wheels continue to fall off of Naomi's life and Ruth's life and Orpah's life as their husbands die. And they're there for, right, a long time. And then finally word gets back that famine is no longer there in Bethlehem. And so they come back. And so I think we see here is that this book, throughout this, one of the threads that is woven throughout this is the fact that even when the wheels seem to be falling off in our life, and yet God is still redeeming. That God is still working, even still in the midst of all that's going on. Again, maybe, right, the assurance that we have is like Job, who says, I know that my Redeemer lives. Right, you sing a song, it is well with my soul. As I'm singing it, sometimes we have to force ourselves to say those words, because sometimes in our hearts it's hard to always believe that it really is well with our soul. Because right now maybe the circumstances are hard, are incredibly difficult. And so we say it in hopes that maybe our heart will follow in the echoes of the words that we're saying. And yet God is still redeeming. And I believe that we are going to be able to see that here in our text this morning. And yet God is still redeeming. So what's the first point, right? Is that life is probably messier than we realize. That life is probably messier than we realize. And you might say, well, Michael, where exactly do you get that? Well, we see here in verses 11 through 12. Again, this is, right, this is where everything just seems, right, everything is really starting to fall into place for Ruth and for Naomi. And Boaz, right, the nearer kinsman redeemer, as we've learned, said, no, I'm out of here. I don't want that responsibility. I'm not willing to take up that duty. And Boaz's heart is probably quite relieved. I know Ruth's heart would have certainly been relieved, as well as Naomi. And then we see that the women, not only the women, but the elders and the village people who had witnessed that ceremony there at the village gate, in verses 11 and 12, it says, then the elders and all the people at the gate said, we are witnesses, right? They just witnessed this work of this marriage that God had brought together. And then it says, may the Lord make the woman who's coming into your home like Rachel and Leah. Okay, now here it's in these verses that the witnesses to their marriage are actually going to offer three prayers of blessing. They're going to offer three prayers of blessing. And this first prayer of blessing is there in verse 11. It says, may the Lord make the woman who's coming into your home like Rachel and Leah, who together built up the family of Israel. Now, if you just read that and are unaware of the catastrophe of Rachel and Leah's life, you're going to say, oh, that sounds like a really nice blessing, right? I don't know who Rachel and Leah are, but they must have been fine women, right? And so, okay. Well, to actually kind of understand the mess here, I do want us to go back to Genesis chapter 29, all right, if we can. Genesis chapter 29. Now, portions of this, I am going to just say, I'm going to make this PG, all right? You can read these verses later on your own. I would not recommend it for bedtime story reading with your children unless you want a whole lot of questions. But like some of this, you read it and it's nearly embarrassing. Not embarrassed of scripture, but you're like, oh my goodness, this is going to make me blush of what is taking place. But so we'll try to generalize it for us. Genesis chapter 29. And we're going back here because I think we need to see just how messy the lives of some of these people are. So Genesis chapter 29, you'll find the book of Genesis. It's the very first book of Scripture. Genesis chapter 29, and you'll find it verse 15 starting on page 40. Okay, and here in page 40, if you'll remember, Jacob was tricked into marrying Leah first, right? He was interested in marrying Rachel, but Laban the father tricked Jacob into first marrying Leah, and then the father said, you can have Rachel's hand, but you'll have to work another 7 years. Again, you can read all about it in chapter 29. Okay, so first we have to understand, Jacob marries two wives. Now understand, these passages are not, they often use these words, right? They're descriptive, they're not prescriptive. In other words, these passages are describing the lives of these people. It's not prescribing how we too should live. So don't take this and think, oh, wow, well, if Jacob had two wives, then maybe I should go and have two wives. And if that's you, man, I just pray for you because, like, I love being married, but one wife, I mean, come on, we're good, right, on this. But nonetheless, Jacob ends up having two wives, okay? Laban tricked him. And then in verses 31, near the end of the passage, right? If you look there at 31, the subtitle in the chair Bible says Jacob's children. Well, what happens is Leah first starts having children, and then Rachel gets jealous of Leah, and Rachel says, well, Jacob, you can have my maidservant. Why don't you go and have children with my maidservant? And so Rachel offers up her maidservant to Jacob to have children, and Rachel's maidservant bears children. And then Leah then kind of gets upset too, and then Leah then offers up her maidservant to Jacob and says, why don't you go and have some children with my maidservant. So it's like we've got this competition between Leah and Rachel and these maidservants of how many children can I have for Jacob? And then it's not, and there's this, like, there is this animosity, there's this contention between these two sisters in this situation. And then it's not until Genesis chapter 35, right, in verses 16 through 29, you'll remember that Rachel then did bear, right, she had Benjamin to Jacob, right, so Rachel has a child, this Benjamin, and if you'll remember, right, also Joseph was in this line, but Benjamin was this beloved child also that Rachel had for Jacob, but it was in that childbirth, do you remember what happened to Rachel? Rachel died during that childbirth. And these are the 12 young men that make up the 12 tribes of Israel. Come out of Rachel and Leah and their two maidservants to Jacob. What a mess. And yet what we see here is Rachel and Leah, as Ruth, back to Ruth chapter 4, as Ruth, as these blessings, these prayers of blessing are being called out, Rachel and Leah, right? They are mentioned in this prayer of blessing, right? May you be like Rachel and Leah. And if you'll also remember, Rachel and Leah went through periods of barrenness. And so what they were praying was that God would open up the womb of Rachel, or of, not of Rachel, of Ruth, got to keep all these names straight, of Ruth, that God would open up the womb of Ruth, because you remember, she had been barren, right? She had been married to her husband for what, like 10 years, and was not able to have children, right? And so what these women, what these elders, what they're praying is they're saying, you know, may God open up the womb of Ruth so that she will have children, just like Rachel and Leah in their childbearing contest, that they would have, and that there would be a great family that would come out of them. And so we see here that in this blessing, messy situations exist. The next prayer of blessing then is for Boaz. All right, so we continue on then. Okay, it says then, may you have standing. This is finishing out verse 11. It says, may you have standing in Ephrathah and be famous in Bethlehem. Okay, so first the elders and the village people prayed a prayer of blessing over specifically Ruth. Now they're praying a prayer of blessing over Boaz. And this is a fairly, okay, this is like a pretty tame blessing, just so you know. All right, this is a very tame blessing. But what they're praying is that Boaz would be fruitful. Okay, the use of the title Ephrathah, which was another name for Bethlehem, okay? So, and again, right, we use this all the time, don't we, right? Here in the city of Louisville, right, we have different ways that we refer to the city of Louisville, like we're coming up on the Derby, right? And some people might say, well, this is Derby City, right? So, like, in years down the road, if you're not familiar with this, Derby City, is that a separate city than Louisville? No, it's just another way in which we refer to the city of Louisville. And so this Ephrathah, that word means fruitful, okay? And so what these people are praying for is that Boaz, as he being married to Ruth, is that he would be fruitful. Now, these people don't realize just how significant that prayer is going to be. Because they don't realize that out of Boaz, right, and his genealogy is going to lead up to Jesus. We're going to get there at the end of the sermon, okay? And so they're praying that God would make a name for Boaz, that he would call a name, that he would be a blessing to other people. And boy, little do they realize that out of Boaz, the name above all names is going to come. Okay, so now we get to the third prayer of blessing. This is where it gets crazy, okay? I'll give you the reference. You can go read it on your own. The third prayer of blessing then is for the family of Boaz and Ruth, okay? And again, I think this blessing is again going to remind us just how messy life can sometimes be. Because it says there in verse 12, it says, through the offspring the Lord gives you by this young woman, may your family be like that of Perez, whom Tamar bore to Judah. To understand that, you have to then go back to Genesis chapter 38. That name Tamar is also a significant name because Tamar was a non-Israelite. Okay? So you had Judah who had some sons, right? One of his sons was married to Tamar. Tamar, being a non-Israelite, all right, comes into the family, but Tamar's husband died, leaving her a childless widow as a non-Israelite. Now, does that sound somewhat familiar to our book of Ruth here? And so what Judah does is Judah, being right the patriarch, the father, he instructs one of Tamar's brother-in-laws, as we've learned, to fulfill the Levirate marriage, to fulfill that responsibility, that duty, but he is unwilling to fully fulfill his duty to Tamar. And so what Tamar does, here's where it gets even crazier, okay? So Tamar then says, okay, I'm going to take matters into my own hands. She dresses up as a temple prostitute, as Judah is making his way to the temple, she plants herself along the road. She convinces her father-in-law, Judah, to lie with her as a temple prostitute. What happens then? Tamar gets pregnant, and who is born out of that pregnancy? Perez. Messy. Like, how messy? Again, to some extent, almost, right, content that I think, again, I'm not ashamed of God's word, but it's just dealing with realities that kind of make you blush a little bit and kind of make us a little bit uneasy. And yet, in that mess, God was still redeeming. And yet, in that mess, God was still redeeming. And I wonder for you, are there areas of your life that maybe are embarrassing, or you're embarrassed of? Are there areas, are there, as you think about your past, are there areas that maybe you find yourself being a bit ashamed of? Life is messier than we realize, church. Life is hard. Life is messy. Right? Sometimes our lives would be described as a train wreck at times. And not that we're trying to pursue the train wreck, not that we're trying to make it a mess. Sometimes it just becomes a mess. And in those situations, we have to remind ourselves what? And yet, Lord, remind me that you are still in the business of redeeming. I know that my Redeemer lives. The next point then is this, is that we catch glimpses of God's work, of God's hand at work. In verse 13 now, we see how God provided Ruth with a husband. Verse 13a, all right, the first part, it says, so Boaz took Ruth, and she became his wife. All right, so think about the years of difficulty for Ruth. Think about the years of difficulty, the heartache. Think about the uncertainty that Ruth would have faced, right? Don't we oftentimes in those difficult seasons, right, there's an anxiousness, there's an unease, there's an uncertainty. But also we understand that, but in the short time that Ruth and Naomi had been in Bethlehem, God's hand was clearly becoming more visible, right? You think about the progression that took place in Ruth's life when she arrives there to Bethlehem. She arrived as what? As a foreigner, didn't she? How was Ruth always referred to? Ruth the Moabitess, right? She's a foreigner. She's not one of us. But then you see throughout the book, you see the progression. She then moves to being recognized as a lower servant in chapter 2. Then she's announced as a maidservant in chapter 3. And finally, in chapter 4, what is Ruth? She's the wife of Boaz. This not that being married is the be-all, end-all. That's not the point here. But what we see is for Ruth's life, God is redeeming her in the midst of the mess, in the midst of the struggle. So we see God's hand at work in Ruth's life. We also see how God provided a son for Boaz and Ruth in these verses. Look there again in verse 13, it says, so Boaz took Ruth and she became his wife. When he made love to her, the Lord enabled her to conceive. Wow, why is that significant? As I've already mentioned, because for years she had been barren. Again, the blessing, you look back to the blessing, the prayer of blessing that these village people had prayed, these elders, right? They had said, may she be like Rachel and Leah. May she have many children, right? God, open up her womb. And it says that she gave birth to a son. The gift of children was never taken for granted in Israel. And in many of our homes, it's not taken for granted. And the fact that Boaz and Ruth were able to raise up a son to the deceased Elimelech was evidence of God's hand still at work. We also see how God also provided a redeemer for Naomi. Look here in verses 14 through 17, that God provided a redeemer for Naomi. It says, the women said to Naomi, "Praise be to the Lord, who this day has not left you without a guardian redeemer, a kinsman redeemer." It says, "May he become famous throughout Israel. He will renew your life and sustain you in your old age, for your daughter-in-law who loves you and who is better to you than seven sons has given him birth." Then Naomi took the child in her arms and she cared for him. The women living there said, "Naomi has a son," and they named him Obed. He was the brother of Jesse, the father of David. Now in these verses, right, we should be impressed with the spiritual perception that these elders of the city, well, I guess here it's just the village women. We should be impressed with the spiritual perception that these women who surrounded Naomi had. Right? Did you notice how they summed everything up? They didn't praise Naomi, did they? Instead, who did they praise? They praised God for what he had done in her life. They see evidence of God's hand at work. Now remember, how did she refer to herself when she first arrived to Bethlehem? Do you remember? Right? All the village, right? The village women, they're like, "Naomi's back. Hey." And what did Naomi say? She said, "Don't call me Naomi." Right? She said, God has been very bitter toward me. He's been very harsh toward me. Right? So there's an accusation that Naomi is making toward the Lord. She's saying, "God has done these bad things to me." What had she forgotten? She had forgotten that God, and yet still God, is still redeeming. Even in the mess, even in the heartache of our lives. But here, and I wonder if it was some of those same women, right? You remember those women back in chapter 1 who had surrounded her and who welcomed Naomi back? I wonder if it was some of those same women who then circled around Naomi, praising God. And they also pronounce a blessing on the child. It says, "God has given to Ruth. May he become famous in Israel." It's going to be this child who these verses say, it will be this child who will encourage, protect, and provide for Naomi in her old age. Notice also, this really is interesting. Again, the book is called Ruth, but yet the book doesn't end focusing on Ruth's life, does it? The book spends a portion of the end, the concluding verses, are focused on Naomi. Right, the book opens focusing on Elimelech and Naomi, and now here it ends focusing on how God has worked in Naomi's life. So it says there, right, what is this young son is referred to as a redeemer for Naomi. Not a spiritual redeemer, but someone who is going to help sustain the family name. Do you notice it says, "He will renew your life and sustain you in your old age," there in verse 15. It says, "For your daughter-in-law who loves you and who is better to you than seven sons has given him birth." Now notice this. It says, then Naomi, verse 16, then Naomi took the child in her arms and she cared for him. Check out what happens next. The women living there said, "Naomi has a son." And they named him Obed. It's fascinating how the townsfolks had a part in naming the child that Ruth had. I don't know if they had the final word on it. I don't know if it was a team effort. I don't know if this is what they did at the baby shower in preparation for it. But I guess my suggestion is that in keeping in line with this biblical practice, we're going to allow Derek and Tori, we're like in two Sundays, we're going to get together and determine the name of their child. All right? We're going to vote and do all that thing. No, we wouldn't. Yeah, Tori's like, I'm out of here, right? I'm no longer. Derek, we're never darkening the door of that church ever again, right? It's just an interesting, right? Because we, right, parents go about this hard, you know, they try to come up with that perfect name for their child, and here it is, and we make this pronouncement. But here, this was a town effort in coming up with the name of Obed, and it says he was the father of Jesse, the father of David. So you look back here, and you see God's hand, right? You see Naomi's given a child, right, a redeemer. You see that Ruth and Boaz are given a son. You see that Boaz is given a wife. Ruth is given a husband. You see that through this, God restores the family name of Elimelech, right? Oftentimes, the best way to catch God's hand at work is to do what? Is to look back. I know that my Redeemer lives. And yet still, God is redeeming. When you find yourself struggling to believe that to be true, one of the best practices is this, is to look back and recall the hand of God in your life. Ruth, the book of Ruth was written from a hindsight perspective, all right? There's narrator comments all along. It was not a real-time document. It was a document that wrote what had already happened. And it wrote it in such a way that it gave us that perspective of seeing how God was working in the midst of that. And so sometimes when your life might seem as if it's that orchestra where all of these different things are happening, sometimes the best thing to do is to go back and to see how God's hand has been worked in the different situations where when you were in the midst of it, it was hard to believe that God was doing anything. Then finally, is that God will ultimately fulfill his plans and purposes. We see this in Ruth chapter 4, verses 18 through 22. This then is the family line of Perez. Who is Perez? He was the little rascal who was born to Tamar, who was fathered by Tamar's father-in-law under a rather scandalous situation. But here's Perez. It says, Perez was the father of Hezron. Hezron the father of Ram. Ram the father of Amminadab. Amminadab the father of Nahshon. Nahshon the father of Salmon. Salmon the father of Boaz. Boaz the father of Obed. Obed the father of Jesse. And Jesse the father of David. What we see here is that God's plans and purposes are always fulfilled. God's redeeming work is not a straight line. God's redeeming work is not, at least to us, God's redeeming work is not a straight line forward. Instead, his purposes have a way of crisscrossing and zigzagging throughout our lives, throughout the lives of other people, from one person to another, using every situation, every station of our lives to simultaneously work out his purpose and plan. Do you ever remember, did any of you ever do string art? Do you remember what that, right, that string art, right? It required a board, a wooden board. Maybe you did this when you were in elementary school. Maybe you're a professional string artist. I don't know. But what would you do? You would take a board and you would, right, there's this, you'd put this, I guess this pattern down, and then you'd put in all of these nails, right? So the first part is you got to make sure you put the nails in all in the right place. And then you would start stringing it together. And there were times when you do that string art where you would say, why does it go from this one all the way down here? That just doesn't make sense. And why am I then going all the way back over here? And why am I going all the way over here? And what is going on? And when we're in the midst of that string art process, we think, I must be doing something wrong here. But yet over time, what happens? You get a really pretty picture. A really beautiful picture comes out. What at first seems to be a random sequence, something beautiful emerges from it. And it seems that God is always fulfilling his plans and his purposes. In the book of Ruth, we see how God is taking messy situations and his hand is at work throughout it all to what? To orchestrate his perfect plan, his perfect purpose for your life and for my life. I'd like to read just a portion of a helpful book regarding the book of Ruth. It's called Faithful God by Sinclair Ferguson. And he makes these helpful observations and provides some instruction in it. He says, there is a broad and general lesson to be learned here. The explanation for much that takes place in our lives lies well beyond our lives. Let me just say that again. The explanation for much that takes place in our lives lies well beyond our lives and may be hidden from us for all of our lives. For God does not mean to touch only our lives by what he does in us. He has the lives of others in view as well, even those who are still yet to be born. He continues. He says, that is why life can be so untidy for the people of God. Because God has yet to finish his business. In your life, there may be loose ends. The tapestry is only partially complete. He is still much weaving. He's doing much weaving in which he will bring eventually these loose ends together, perhaps in someone else's life in the future. Someone we may never meet. Someone long after we're gone. And yet through that, God means to bring blessings and answers to prayer beyond anything we could ever ask or imagine, just as he has done here. And so why is this genealogy so important at the end of Ruth? Because what seemingly, from a first reading in chapter 1, seems to be a train wreck, devastation, heartache, that this genealogy is significant because the father, right, it says Obed, right, Boaz, the father of Obed. Again, a big mess leading up to Boaz, right? And also, just so you know, I think Rahab was the father of Boaz. Do you know who Rahab is? Right, Rahab was a non-Gentile as well, a prostitute as well, a woman of the night. Through this, but God does a wonderful thing. Now, so, and again, you've probably already jumped there. Go to Matthew chapter 1. You'll find the book of Matthew later in the Bible, in the New Testament. Matthew is the start of the New Testament. Really, that benchmark from that divides those who are anticipating Jesus' birth to those who experienced Jesus' birth or saw Jesus' birth, and then saw his life as well. So again, so you look here, the genealogy of Jesus, the Messiah, and you pick it up there, well, we'll just, verse 2. Abraham was the father of Isaac. Isaac, the father of Jacob. Jacob, the father of Judah and his brothers. Okay, here's some names that we've already mentioned this morning. Judah, the father of Perez. We know Perez. And Zerah, whose mother was, who was it? His mother? Tamar. There it is. Perez, the father of Hezron. Hezron, the father of Ram. Ram, the father of Aminadab. Aminadab, the father of Nashon. Nashon, the father of Salmon. Again, so we recognize this. Why is this important? Because Matthew finishes out this genealogy, or at least takes us to an important person. Salmon, the father of Boaz, whose mother was who? Rahab. There it is. Boaz, the father of Obed, whose mother was who? Ruth. Obed, the father of Jesse, and Jesse, the father of King David. And then it goes on. So that's where it stops. The book of Matthew then, or Matthew, continues it on all the way to reminding us that in this family line, then you jump to verse 16. You jump to verse 16. It says, and Jacob, the father of Joseph, the husband of Mary, and Mary was the mother of Jesus, who is called the Messiah. Did Boaz and Ruth know that? Absolutely not. That's why we have to remind ourselves, and yet God is still redeeming. Because we don't know how God is working. His ways are beyond our ways. If we understood God's ways, then we would be God. And we're not. And we can't understand it. But yet God is still working. And church, what is faith? Faith is believing in that which we cannot see. Faith is believing that God is still working even in the midst of my mess and the messes that I'll continue to encounter in life. The faith is believing that the Redeemer is still redeeming even in my deepest sorrow and even in my most difficult heartache. When the pain is so hard to bear. Don't misunderstand me. I'm not saying that we should somehow shrug off the heartache or the pain or the reality of the loss of loved ones or the reality of the news, of the bad news that maybe we've heard even this week. We don't shrug that off. That's hard. That's hard to hear. And yet sometimes, when we find ourselves in the middle of that, we have to join with the chorus. And even at times just say, even at times what our heart might be struggling to believe, it will be well with my soul. It will be well one day with my soul. And that God's purposes may never be understood by me in my lifetime. But because Ruth, through this, the promise that he is still redeeming, that I can believe that in my heart too. Would you just pray with me? Lord, I just ask that your Spirit, your Holy Spirit now, would take these truths, Father, to those whose hearts are God, to those whose hearts are maybe rather raw right now. God, I just pray that your Spirit would be that gentle comfort to them. God, I pray that you would just help us to hold on to these truths, that you are redeeming, that you are working, even though we might fail to see it or believe it right now. Lord, I pray for anyone in here this morning who is struggling to know where to turn. God, I pray that they would turn to you and that they would trust in you. and that they would find you to be their comfort. And God, that if they've not received you, Lord, that they would trust in Jesus, the Redeemer. And I pray this in his name. Amen.